the ABC's Word Wizard, the Lord of Language. A word in your ear with Professor Rolly Sussex.
Yes, the Lord of Language indeed, Rolly Sussex. Good morning.
Good morning, Anthony.
Yes, it's been an eventful, hasn't it, morning start to the day.
Well, I was driving in listening to you and suddenly we got here, we're evacuating.
I think we made a tweet that the ABC had to evacuate. For our state listeners have joined us, but for those of you unaware, we had to evacuate the building earlier.
Indeed, and evacuate, of course.
And evacuate we had. And I've never experienced it before, Rolly, but it's you have to leave now. And we're in the middle of playing a beautiful piece of opera, I might add.
I know, I was listening.
And you had to evacuate. But all is well, I might point out. But the word evacuate, what can you tell us about it?
Latin.
Latin?
Vacuous means empty. And the ebit on the front means out of. Okay, so both escape and evacuate are both getting out of some place. And the vacuous but means empty, and so you can evacuate a building. You can evacuate solids and liquids. You know, you can evacuate a test tube or something by getting the air out of it. You can evacuate your bowels. Indeed, making things empty. And if you know just a little bit about words, you can look. If you find an E on the front, you think that's probably Latin, means out of. All right. And so escape is the same thing. Escapade, all right. It actually comes from French and it meant out of. And the escape bit originally came from capa, which means a cloak. So getting out of your cloak, you escaped.
Well, we evacuated, we escaped, however you see it.
But you are now back and full.
But we are here and to take your calls. And if you have any questions for Rolly, 1300 222 612 is the telephone number. Did you want to share with us any information or go straight to calls? It's your call here. What would you like to do?
I wanted to start browsing mentally about the notion of norms. In current Australian English, because it's really tricky. In the early days of the ABC, everybody looked to the BBC and said, what are Lord Reith's newsreaders doing? You know, this is the BBC with the news and this is so-and-so reading it. And that was the, if you like, the thing that you should try to aspire to.
That was the norm.
That was the norm. Well, in a kind of way. But then, of course, Australians were talking quite differently behind the shelter sheds and when they were playing in the playground. And we had this kind of tension between the up-there norm and the everyday norm. Gradually, the Australian norm has asserted itself. But it's really tricky nowadays to try and find out where is the if you like, the centre of gravity of the sorts of norms that we'd like people to use. And one of my personal favourites is Richard Feidler. He's a great talker.
Yes.
And it seems to me that he's pitched his voice in a very appropriate Australian way. But there's all sorts of things going on where we've got choices. Do you say schedule or schedule?
Mostly schedule,
yes.
But I do get caught out from time to time and say schedule.
Uh-huh.
Should I be saying schedule or schedule?
Either or both.
Right.
But it's partly generational. I'm a schedule person because I grew up with that. Schedule is American. But then after all, SCH in school is SCH. So there's a kind of model which is pushing it that direction. SCH is SCH. Well, there's schist, which is the name of a sort of rock formation or soil or something. But, you know, people are really quite bothered because you hear skirt from the Americans and shirt from the BBC, and we tend to vacillate between the two. Do you say research or research?
Research, but I think I changed when I because of the work that I do at UQ as well.
Interesting.
I used to say research, but then I heard a lot of academics pronounce it as research.
That's right. They tend to be a bit more conservative.
Right. So the research is more of a conservative approach.
It's the older British one.
Right.
But then that's putting the stress on the last syllable, right? The research one is more American, put the stress on the first syllable. But then beret, baton, perfume, all stressed on the last syllable, they're all American as well. And I once went into a shop and said, would you say perfume and perfume? And they said, well, it depends whether you want to spend more than $400. That's perfume.
Sign of a good salesperson, I think.
Oh, yes. I mean, either mark yourself as a person of quality and money or be down market. But these things are typical part of Australian English at the moment. There are lots and lots of choices which are around us all the time. And it's quite tricky to know which way to jump. I've got I've got lots more examples, but maybe we can talk to the callers.
So there's no right or wrong, is what you're saying. It's how we've been influenced.
And in what context? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, at the universities you'll tend to hear research more than research, but in the general world, probably you'll hear research more. And it's certainly gaining ground very quickly. So that depending on who you're talking to, your generation, your gender sometimes, and the topic of conversation, you can jump one way or the other. Mm. I've got another devilish one, which is contribute.
I've never said contribute. I've always said contribute.
You're a man of honour.
Right.
But
thank you, Rolly.
The British have given us contribute and distribute. And David Cameron, he of Brexit fame, was the one who really propagated it. And, you know, it's distribution and distribute and so on, not with a stress on the first syllable, but the BBC's been doing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one where, although the Americans have been responsible for a lot of these first syllable stresses, this is one where the British have done it. And by the way, there's another one, harassment and harassment. Which way? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, I'm thinking. I think I tend to, and it depends. I probably say harassment more because of having worked at the ABC over the years for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The same that I would apply to saying schedule, because that's how they used to refer to it as. But harassment, look, maybe I do say it. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe.
I've caught myself saying both.
Yes.
And oddly enough, remember, first stress is American. In this case, it's the other way around. Harassment is British and harassment is American.
You can't
win, I tell you.
You can't win. You can't win indeed. 13 after 10 with Rolly this morning. Hazel's first up with her question. Good morning to you, Hazel.
Good morning, Rolly.
Morning.
I have a problem with alternatives.
Yes.
It's about the replacement of the adverb so with one that is pronounced that. And all it does for me is lead to confusion.
I
read a sentence the other day that
go on.
Was like this. We find that much food waste hard to believe. And that didn't make sense.
Oh, right, yes.
They'd missed out an is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked out later that it was something different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is an example of the spoken colloquial language pushing its way into the written language. And when I was at school, I can actually remember being told off when someone said that. You know, that much rather than so much.
Mm.
But nowadays, that much rather than so much is probably about 50-50, and we'll just have to see which way it works out. Something from the spoken language that definitely is not accepted in the written language is from off of.
Yeah, sure.
Well spotted, Hazel. This is one that is in transition at the moment, and we'll have to see which one actually wins.
All right, we'll watch with interest. Thank you, Hazel. Thanks for your call. 14 after 10 on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland with Rolly Sussex this morning till 10:30. Barry's at Carelden. Good morning to you, Barry.
Well, good morning, Rolly.
Hi there.
Rolly, my issue is perhaps an aged thing, but I've noticed more and more the word problematic being used in sentences and through the media, whereas I thought problem may have been a better selection of word.
Ah, I know what you're on about, yes. This is a problematic rather than... Now, the adjective problematic has been around for yonks, and it simply means something that is difficult and poses difficulties. But a problematic, it's a little bit business speak, I think, and it's one of the ones which you occasionally hear from people. I think people say it trying to appear deep and meaningful and thoughtful and impressive. But I agree with you. It's something which, at least for the moment, we don't want to hear. Unless you're using it as an adjective. There was a problematic situation in the ABC this morning. Anthony and his friends had to evacuate.
Yep.
That's
there's
right.
Fact in that as well, if I add.
Oh, yeah.
not so problematic toward the end, but yeah. True. Thanks, Barry. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
16 after 10. Let's go to Greg. By the way, the number is 1300-222-612 if you have a question for Rolly. Greg, good morning.
Morning, Anthony and Rolly. My bugbear is the interchanging use of the word amount and number.
Ah, yes.
I grew up using number to describe the number of units, whether it's people or cars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But increasingly, ABC and generally, a mount is being replaced. And I use a mount to describe volume as opposed to units.
Mm-hmm.
Things. What's the story behind that?
Okay, historically and grammatically, you're correct in that number is used for things which can be counted. You know, so there was a large number of people on the street, there were 57 or whatever, but I've got a large amount of butter in my fridge. And you shouldn't mix them either way with the other one. However, a mount is now being used for countables. And it's very common. A large amount of cars on the road this evening, we're going to have a terrible traffic jam. And it's paralleled by the fewer and less thing. Now, fewer used to be things you can count, less for mass, as you say, for amount. Unfortunately, fewer is two syllables and less is one syllable. And fewer is being challenged and it's losing against less, I'm afraid. So people will tend to say there's less people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that which would have been wrong a few years ago is now
more acceptable.
Is more acceptable. Mm-hmm. And I would still, if you have a decent sub-editor at a newspaper, they would fall upon that with a red pen. But in speech and in quite a lot of writing, you'll actually see these things now.
Creeping in.
That's right.
What's the ABC's rule? What do they have as the requirement?
Okay, the ABC style guides are still very much in favour of the traditional ones, but they recognise that the other pair, you know, the ones from mass are encroaching on countable things, and we just have to watch out where they are.
All right. Greg, thank you for your call. Let's go to Hal. Good morning to you, Hal.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning, Professor.
I'm Rowley.
Rowley, all right. I was born about the same time as you. I've got trouble getting out of old habits.
Okay.
The change in the use of expressions, casual expressions, so they become meaningless, arguably and unarguably, right? A sportsman is unarguably the greatest at his particular sport.
Mm-hmm.
How can he be arguably the greatest?
All right. Arguably means something that is open to disagreement. So, you know, he is arguably the best full forward of his day, meaning there is evidence which you can use to in favour of that, but there may be counter-arguments for someone in favour of someone else.
That's
unarguably means it's beyond dispute.
Well, it was unarguably when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And cheap at twice the price.
Oh, yes.
Has become cheap at half the price. That's dead true. Half the price is dead cheap.
Yeah, sometimes these things shift. The Americans have got a funny one where they say, we would say, I couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, I could care less. Now, I couldn't care less means we have reached a level below which I don't have any interest at all. The Americans, meaning exactly the same, will say, I could care less.
Yeah.
And if you think about that carefully, it's actually counterintuitive. I won't call them illogical because there's more of them than there is of us.
It's a bit like Eliza Doolittle, really.
Yeah, well.
Just a little, maybe.
English just a little.
Hasn't been heard there in years.
Yeah, but Eliza was being made to move upmarket. I can do bloody well without you, yes.
Hal, thanks for your call. Have a great weekend. 20 after 10 on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland with Rolly Sussex this morning. 1300 222 612. Robert's been very patient. Good morning to you, Robert.
Good morning. Good morning, Rowley.
Morning.
Rowley, it's more of a sharing of language experiences rather than questions. I was in California about 30 years ago, and I was very, very amused to hear the weather forecaster say that the humidity would be 78%.
I've never heard it said that way before.
Yes.
That's right. And the other two things are, if the ABC, I'm sure he won't change his habit after 30 years either, if the ABC would let Macca know that it's Saturday, not Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm sure he won't change after 30 years.
Okay. It'll be a brave man to tell Macca how to do things.
Mm.
However, the loss of a syllable after a stressed syllable, right? Saturday, So sat is the stressed one, the next one is weak, and very often in English, the weak one just gets weakened to the point where it vanishes. So medicine, we talked about this last week, written as three syllables, but if you hear someone who's studying it, what are you doing? I'm doing medicine.
Mm.
And that's just two syllables. And sometimes it's there because it's hard to pronounce, like the R sound in English, library, often library, right? And February rather than February. And Wednesday, three syllables, Wednesday too. So it's part of a recognized simplification in English where a stressed syllable is so strong and that the one next door to it is weakened and then just falls out.
And how was humidity heard?
It was Hamaditi.
Hamaditi, yeah.
Mind you, I once heard a person doing the tennis scores, and she said, and the score was 40-0. Oh, dear.
Dear indeed. Robert, thanks for your call. We want to get through as many as we can this morning. We have a board full, but still your chance to talk to Rolly before 10:30. John is in Toowoomba. Good morning to you, John.
Yes, good morning, all. Good morning, Rolly.
Morning.
The question I have is emphasis on a particular word in a short sentence. I hear this on the ABC quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, Sabra Lane. She says, I am Sabra Lane, and it is 6:30 a.m.
Right.
It sounds a little bit off, when it's almost aggressive. I am, and it is.
I see. It's perfectly grammatically fine, and it's difficult to work out what else you'd say, unless you would, my name is, or whatever. But short words, Churchill knew this very well, and I think of his We Shall Fight Them on the Beaches speech. Short words, clearly enunciated, as a way of making a point. And so I am Sabra Lane, sort of, you know, wake up people, here we go. I think it's a stylistic thing rather than anything else, and it's certainly grammatically fine.
John, thank you for your call. Janelle's also in Toowoomba. Good morning, Janelle.
Good morning. I found something creeping into meetings and so forth. The word agreeance.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is rather than agreement. A lot of people are doing this. Now, there are two ways of making this sort of abstract noun in English from a verb. So you've got agree, agreement, or agree, agreeance. And in this case, there's absolutely no doubt that historically agreement is the right one. However, a lot of people saying agreeance, and there are many, many thousands of both. And as a result of this, the Macquarie Dictionary about 8 years ago actually threw in the towel and said, okay, we recognize it exists. So you look under agreement and you'll find also agreeance. Now, it's listed second, so it's not the favored choice.
Oh, I just ruffled my feathers every time.
Well, keep your feathers ruffled. You're on the right line.
Janelle, thanks for your call. Oh, dear. So often, even if it's not acceptable,
yes,
but it's widely popular or used, they'll give in.
Eventually, usage will sometimes win.
Mm.
Okay, so awesome, for example, used to mean something that caused awe, made you feel terror, whereas it then became the ultimate all-purpose word for approval among younger people. Do you say awesome?
Not really.
No. Do you say cool?
Not really.
There you go.
I'm too old-fashioned. I'm too old for that.
And I'm even more old-fashioned than you are.
All right, let's go to Joe's in Townsville. Morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks. Your question to Rolly.
Rolly, what would you suggest the workplace of a scientist is?
Ah, laboratory.
Oh, very good.
Thank you kindly. Laboratory is American.
Well, funny that, because I was listening to the ABC Radio Rural Report first thing in a morning, and it came up constantly that they were doing some research, and the words that came out of the reporter's mouth was, the scientists are doing research in their laboratory. And I thought initially they were saying
laboratory. Yes. Okay. But if you've got laboratory, all right, then that's a strong syllable again. The next one is weak and it falls out. So laboratory, whatever. I don't like this, and I don't say it, but laboratory is American, like mandatory and ceremony and various others that caused Janelle's hair to stand on end. And it's quite separate from lavatory, of course, because laboratory comes from labor, Latin, which means work or labor, and the lavatory comes from lavare, which means to wash. Unfortunately, they've started to converge.
Mm.
Well spotted.
It was grating on me very much.
It's all right.
I had to listen to it 3 or 4 times.
Maintain the rage.
Maintain the rage. The ABC is getting a real hit today, but that looked fine. We're happy.
Well, look, as long as people are listening to us.
That's right. Just as long, you could be more than happy to get this sort of feedback. We'll pass it on. Joe, thank you for your call. Jeremy is in Cairns this morning. Sunny Cairns. I don't know whether it's sunny. Is it sunny in Cairns? Good morning, Jeremy.
It's sunny. It's hot. It's pretty sunny and hot.
It wasn't yesterday. It was my daughter lives in Cairns, and they had a waterfall coming down the back of the hill. It was huge.
Oh, yes, it was a bit dumb, yes.
Your question.
My question is it's the origins of the phrase balls up.
Oh.
I know. I used to work in the maritime industry, and I know that there's a lot of general phrases that comes from that. And so from my understanding, to paint the picture, you use day shapes in the maritime industry to indicate to other vessels certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
And to show that a vessel has run aground, you put up 3 spherical shapes just in front of the foremast. And so the phrase, the captain or someone has made a balls up. That's where the phrase comes from, I believe.
Ah.
Are you aware of it?
No, I'm not. And thank you very much. I will do a little bit of research on this one because there are literally hundreds of colloquial expressions relating to the parts of procreation, which we shall call. And this one could well be, because running aground isn't exactly the thing that a captain wants to be known for. And so I'll do a bit of research, and maybe while I'm doing it, I'll find another person who knows what your vang is.
That comes from the Dutch.
It does.
I believe so, because boom is Dutch for tree or branch or something.
Correct,
so
yes.
Boom, and I think vang is associated with that.
Yeah, this is from the period when the Dutch and the English were the top dogs in maritime things.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dutch were awfully good at ships. And the vang is a sort of a piece which bridges the gap between the boom and the mast and pulls the boom down so the sail will work properly. But if you say to someone, how's your vang this morning, they'll probably look
and slap you. Yes. Jeremy, thank you for your call, and thank you for giving Rolly some homework this week.
Indeed.
That'll be great. So maybe next week you can share that with
us? I will. All right.
So listen in next week. Jeremy, thank you. 29 after 9, let's go to Sandra, who's been very patient. If I push the right button, Sandra will, in fact, be there. Good morning to you, Sandra.
Hello. Morning, gentlemen.
Mm.
Good question. In the written form, the walk past.
Mm.
Is it P-A-S-T or is it P-A-S-S-E-D?
Okay. The adjective and the adverb is P-A-S-T. Okay, so a past event is P-A-S-T, and he walked past me, P-A-S-T. But he passed me in the street. That's part of the verb to pass, and it's P-A-S-S-E-D.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Got it? Right.
All right, simple one there. Thanks, Sandra.
Yeah, sometimes when people ring up and say, I've just got a simple question, and I think this is going to take 3 hours. But this one actually did fall out quite nicely.
Past and past. Good on you, Sandra. Thank you. Brian's in Auchenflower. Morning, Brian.
Oh, Blaine in Auchenflower.
Blaine, yes.
I sent a text earlier this year about bread and duck under the table. Well, my mother, who used to say that, she was born in Rockhampton in 1931.
Mm.
She's passed away. But she told me when they were young, they used to pronounce skiing as sheeing.
Ah, it's actually ski. It comes from Nordic languages, and it means actually cross-country racing and jumping on skis. Skiing, you have to be terribly careful, because particularly in France, it's an extremely rude word. But there are very few words written, SK, that are pronounced sh in English, and this, I think, was a misunderstanding.
Right. Yes, that sounded odd, but she insisted that's the way they used to pronounce it.
Well, interestingly, by the way, skirt and shirt are the same word borrowed twice, because we borrowed skirt from the Scandinavians about 1,000 years ago and then made skirt into shirt, and that happens regularly in English.
Isn't that interesting?
And then we borrowed it again, so that we've now got a skirt as well as a shirt.
Thank you, Blaine. Let's go to Pat in Toowoomba. Morning, Pat.
Good morning. Rolly, my father used to be in the Navy.
Yes.
And he used to lag the pipes. Is lag? I've never heard of it any other time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to lag means to sort of insulate by wrapping things around them, particularly very hot or very cold ones. And it provides insulation. And it comes from an old word meaning to cover.
Oh, good.
Yep. And he was doing his job with the right words.
You don't hear about it anymore.
I think pipes tend to come with polystyrene insulation around them, and we don't actually have to lag them specifically.
Thank you, Pat. Let's go. You were helping so many people today. You thought initially they were hard. Yeah. And you've ticked all their boxes. They're going to be
so
happy,
far,
happy, happy, happy people.
Well, I'm happy because we've got this lovely thing from Jeremy about the three balls, meaning you've run aground.
Homework for Rolly. Let's go to Frank and Mackay. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Yes, Frank.
How are you?
Hi there. Good.
I'm just wondering, a bit of a pet hate of mine is, why is the Australian language not pronounced the way it's written? And the major one is like Wagga Wagga. Does that mean it's written Wagga Wagga? Does that mean that the dog now wags its tail instead of wags it?
Nope. Because to wag its tail comes from a good old English word, meaning to agitate your poor caudal appendage. And Wagga is an Aboriginal word. And you've even got a thing called a Wagga blanket, by the way, which is an old word for a sort of an improvised blanket that you sleep under. That's not heard much in there. And of course, Wagga Wagga is relatively simplified just to Wagga, whereas Boonoo Boonoo, which is Bunnaboonoo, has now acquired a sort of an anglicized form and is pronounced with separate different pronunciations. But as far as place names go, English is the worst language on the planet. If you go anywhere in Europe and you find yourself in country X and you know the spelling rules of country X, I can almost always tell you how to pronounce the place you want to get to. Whereas in English, Worcestershire is, you know, Worcestershire, and Cirencester is Cicester, and the English have a tradition. I mean, there's a place in north of here called, spelled T-I-A-R-O, and I thought that was T-R-O.
Tyro.
It's Tyro, yes. Mm. And when I came back to live in Australia after many years away, I'd forgotten that Talangata was Talangata, and I'd called it Talangata, and the locals had a go at me. So place names, Frank, I'm afraid the worst and the only thing you can do is ask the locals what they call their place.
Indeed. Thank you, Frank, and thank you to all our callers. We got through quite a few this week, but of course Rolly's back next week. One final comment from Anne. Mm. Why can't we evacuate when you come back in?
Well, evacuate would mean to make empty, and if you're already empty, you can't re-empty yourself.
All right, before we go, a final word from
a man who speaks three languages is trilingual. This is from a Frenchman called Claude Gagnère. A man who speaks two languages is bilingual. A man who speaks one language is English.
And on that note, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Rolly.
Bye-bye.
Rolly Sussex.
On your radio and online.
Anywhere, anytime.
This is ABC Radio.